Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Excited to spend some time with today's guest, talk about all of the things that he's doing. He is on tour, the Philadelphia area. He is an actor, comedian, a writer, and much more. He is Mr. Tim Meadows. I paused there for a second because I started to call you the ladies' man and all this, and I thought that was a little corny.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say corny, but, you know, I mean, it is one of the things that I'm known for, but, and I don't have any, like, embarrassment or, I don't have any, I'm proud of the character, and I'm happy to say, you know, but I love when you say writer. That's, you know, that's also a nice credit to have in there.
Absolutely. Well, that, so let's.
In fact, I'll show you something.
Show me
something. I never do this, but see, it's my Writers Guild Award.
Okay. All right. Congratulations.
Yeah. See, I'm a real writer.
So it is interesting.
Now, I hope this thing doesn't fall on my, head while we do this interview.
That, yeah, let's not do that. Like, we don't want to go viral for that reason. We want to go viral for all of the content. Let's not do that. But that's actually an interesting place to start. Because when you talk about people who have accomplished so many different things, known for comedian, acting, writing, you seem very proud of that part of it. How do you define yourself, or do you?
I don't define myself. I guess I would say father first. But professionally, I would say, like, I guess I'm a comedic actor. That's how I would describe myself. Improvisational actor, comedian, writer, something like that, I think. Because I started off doing improv. So I think that's my, that's the thing that I feel like was my entrance into show business. So I feel like that's what I'm closest to, you know, I'm closest to that.
So that goes back, right? How old were you when you got started in improv and that launched your career?
That launched my career. When I started doing improv, I was probably 24, 25 years old. And I started taking classes in Detroit, Michigan, where I'm at right now, where I live. And I studied under a guy here who I had heard, who had learned from another guy that was famous for teaching improv. It's a guy named Del Close. And I wanted to be a part of that, and I wanted to learn how to do it.
So is it a true story that I read, and this is close to my heart, that you were interested potentially in journalism, and then you saw What We Make and said, that's a hard pass?
Yeah, man. I saw a story about, like, first year. It was the first year job. Like, this is what you'll make first year out of college in whatever profession you chose. And I was looking at journalism and marketing as sort of either those two fields. And I was journalism, I think at the time it was maybe $17,000 a year. And I was making that much money working at a bank and at a Ponderosa steakhouse. So I was like, I had two jobs and I was making more than a journalist starting out. And so I was like, well, I can just keep doing what I'm doing and I'll be fine financially.
I love it.
It's sort of like, it definitely made me rethink. That was one of the things that made me rethink what I was going to do, because I also realized that I could just work at a normal job and learn how to act and do improv, you know? And so I just thought, well, yeah, I don't want to get too far into my story, but I don't know what questions you want to know.
So the, in quotes, struggling actor, comedian, and working at Ponderosa was more appealing than my career path.
Than what you are doing. No offense.
Now listen, I know our bosses watch this show, so I am happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you guys are doing better now, you know, but for me at the time, it was not something I was interested in doing. I just figured I could put it off for a while. I just thought, like, I'm going to pursue this other thing. And then if I can't do it, then I'll come back and I'll, you know, follow my dreams of journalism or advertising or whatever, you know. And I gave myself 5 years, you know, because seriously, I thought I can go to Chicago and I could get, and I did. I worked at a record store and I worked at a store that sold stereos while I was learning how to do improv and which was still making more than a journalist. So I was doing that for a while I was doing improv. So I was still able to take care of myself, you know, as an actor, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then once I started getting gigs, you know, like people don't know this, but like when in Chicago, some of my first jobs was as a model.
Okay.
Yeah. Like not like a handsome model who poses for like, you know, with nice clothes. I was like the kind of model that you would hire to do a U-Haul ad. I'd be like the guy holding a box, like, and the people are pointing where to put the box and stuff. You know, I would get those kind of like print jobs, you know.
Listen, side story real quick. We just had photo day here at the station and the professional photographer came in and he and I were talking and he reminded me of my talk radio days that I did a closed mouth gum disease photo shoot with him where they just wanted normal people to close your mouth and just look there. And people now sometimes will stop me and say, I think I saw you in my dentist's office. So I understand the hustle.
That was the early work. I did a bunch of jobs like that too, where it was just like, you know, one I remember was like they hired like 6 or 7 men to pretend to play soccer on a field. And this photographer was just taking pictures of us as we ran by the camera. And then in the ad that he used it for, it was like, it was like a insurance ad or something, you know, but it had nothing to do with like soccer or whatever. But you could see my legs in the picture running by, like kicking a soccer ball. You know? And I was like, they're going to pay me for this. This is like, I'm living the dream, you know?
Gum disease and soccer shoots were still better than journalism. The theme of this segment so far. So you said you gave yourself 5 years to kind of go out there and pursue that path. And you started getting the gigs and improvisation and comedy. And then was it fast track? Did SNL and the big leap hit that fast?
Well, I mean, considering, like, looking back, I mean, it happened literally within the 5 years that I said that I would give myself. Because I was 28, 29 when I started SNL. But yeah, I mean, I went to Chicago and I did improv there all the time, everywhere I could do it. And I was spotted by Second City, which is the bigger improv theater company. And I took classes there. They asked me to audition for the touring company. I was hired by the touring company. I toured for a year. And then this teacher who I was a fan of, Del Close, was hired by Second City to direct a main stage show, and he promoted me from the touring company to the main stage show. And that happened over a period of about 3 years, that I went from like touring or just being a guy who did soccer ads to a guy who was like on the main stage of Second City. So I mean, it was kind of fast track. And then Saturday Night Live came a couple years after that. They saw me performing there and then brought me to New York. And that was over a 5 year period.
And you didn't even have to audition. Like, they saw you and they're like, I want that guy.
Yeah. I didn't have to audition. And I think they start making people audition after they hired me without an audition. They're like, you know what? We better go back to doing the auditions again.
Like, I'm pretty sure I remember that guy from a soccer commercial. We should get him on SNL.
Yeah. What is he doing here? But I didn't audition. And I think there was maybe a little confusion because I think in the beginning there was talk that I was just going to come on as a writer. And I think Lauren Michaels maybe decided differently somewhere in between me having a meeting with him and them bringing me out to do the show. I was sort of unsure. And then when I got there, they were like, you're a writer and a featured player, basically.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's what I did.
You ended up being one of the longest standing members of SNL, did about 10 years on SNL. Do you sit back now and look at it and go, wow, that was big? Because you seem like, this was my path. And I was doing the ads and I was doing improv and ended up on SNL writing and featuring and had a long standing career there.
Yeah. I guess as I look back on it, it was a big accomplishment, and it was a dream come true. I really wanted to. I loved that show, and I love that kind of comedy, and I love sketch comedy, and so. For me to get the opportunity to work on that show, it was big. I mean, when I got that phone call from Michael Shoemaker, I literally knew my life was going to change. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. I was living in a studio apartment in Chicago, and it was a nice studio, but it was still a studio. Yeah, and I was with a girl, who I was dating at the time. And then she was like, oh, my God. And I was like, I know. Oh, my God. I can't believe this. I can't believe I'm not going to be dating you anymore. I'm going to be dating hotter chicks.
Like, oh, you said, oh, my God, but for very different reasons. You were like, yeah. Oh, my God, and goodbye.
Oh my God, maybe I can date Holly Berry.
But was it that? So the oh my God moment turned into an oh my God 10 years, turned into being, I mean, 10 years isn't exactly overnight. Even 10 years with the 5 years isn't exactly overnight, but you became an extremely recognizable and your characters became extremely recognizable. Like, what was that like? For somebody who was, seemingly enjoying the art and the writing and what have you, now people all know you.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's not what I got into this for. I mean, like, I didn't, I always tell my kids this, and whether people believe me or not, I did not get into this to be rich. I didn't get into this to be famous. I got into it because I love doing comedy, and my career has been fine, but I know people way more successful than me, and I know people who aren't as successful as me, but like, my initial drive for, coming to Philly this weekend or whatever is not, because I want to be famous or I love performing. I love doing stand-up. I love doing improv when I want to do it. When I don't want to do it, I don't love it. You know what I'm saying? But when I love doing it, I love doing it,
And that was the goal.
That was the goal, yeah, that was the goal. The goal was never like, I want to be a legendary comedian or I want to be a legendary character actor or stand-up or anything. It was just, literally, I'm going to try this for 5 years and I'll see what happens. And that's it.
You know what's really interesting? And you said that people may or may not believe you when you say that. But I'm going to share with you the conversation that myself and producer had as I was doing research for this interview. And I said to her behind the scenes, in doing research for this interview, the first impression that I get is he doesn't care that much about the celebrity status. Like, you can look at your stuff and your social media and the things that you've done, and it doesn't come across as the, which is interesting for someone who is high profile, as the person who cares that much about the look at me.
That's very perceptive, doctor.
Right. Listen, I'm not a doctor, but I wasn't a gum disease ad, so I know a little something about this.
Yeah, no, man. I guess, right, like, I don't. I love working, you know, somebody, I was had a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about getting canceled or whatever, and I was like, I think I've been canceled. I think I have the career of a person that's canceled, you know, and I just work quietly and nobody, you know, nobody messes with me and I don't mess with anybody. And I just quietly do my job and appear in these things and, you know, but, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't have any desire to be more famous than I am or to be, you know, anything. I don't know. I just don't have that thing that other people might have.
So you're living what you wanted. You're living that goal. This is where you wanted to be. And touring and the movies and you know, musical movie, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But this, this is what you envisioned when you said, I'm going to give myself this kind of time to see if I can make it.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I envisioned to see if I can give myself time. I mean, I think if there were, you know, things that like I want or like I, you know, I'm like any other working actor, basically, you know, I want to do another project. Like I want another series. I want to do, you know, I want to do a TV comedy special or, you know, I want to continue to work. But I don't have the kind of career that I can say, okay, I'm going to have a meeting with some networks and they're going to pitch stuff to me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have that kind of career. So there's a part of me that still has a need and desire to work, you know? But I'm not like on the other side of the thing where I'm just like, yeah, people are waiting for a new Tim Meadows project or something. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm out there like hitting hammers and nails and like wood and stuff. I'm like building. I'm like the plumber of the project. You know, I come in, they hire me to do a specialized job, you know, and I come in and I do it.
But people continue. So that's you're on tour. And people continue to want to see it. People continue to support the tours. People, you're doing three shows here over Thanksgiving here in Philadelphia. There are the people who are saying, I want to see the next Tim Meadows project. So when you come here in Philly and when you're on tour, what is that comedy show going to look like?
Well, it's, look, it's a traditional stand-up comedy show. It's me, just like in this interview. You find out who I am, and if you don't know me, you get to know me a little bit, and you come to love me in 45 minutes or an hour. And that's what it is, you know? I mean, I don't know. I talk about aspects of my life. And a lot of it is heightened reality jokes and things and observations that I have. And, you know, and if you know me from my comedy, you know that I do over my career, there's been conceptual comedy pieces that I've done on SNL. And there are characters that I've done. So you know that I'm not just like your typical stand-up comedian. You know the things that I'm going to be talking about. If you know me, it's going to be fun. It's going to be different, and it's going to be, and I think this year through too, I feel more seasoned, as they say. And I also feel like I have a more of a message in my stand up this time out. And I really like the reaction that I get from the audiences because I have fun and the show is great. And then I ended by talking about things and talking about us as Americans and my hopes and dreams for our country.
But that part
and
is
you, like I said, you love me by the end of the show.
I get it. Like I get it. But yeah. There is, you talked earlier about the living the canceled comedian life, and you know, by choice in some circumstances. But has it, comedy has, or has it, I'm not a comedian, but it seems as if it has changed because of that. Like you said, you like to talk about issues and things and who we are.
Right.
But it feels like that has become more of a slippery slope. And you've been doing that for a minute. I mean, you go back to OJ and AC and making those types of jokes that were controversial topics at the time. Can you still address those issues, or have we gone so far into divided that that's not even fun anymore?
I don't think that we've gone. I don't think that we've gone so far that it's not fun. I think it's just that it's not fun for some people. I think people are, one, overly sensitive for themselves, but also overly sensitive that other people are being offended or being persecuted by jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so the heightened awareness and sensitivity can be a minefield for comedians to walk through. And then what you have to learn to do as a comedian is how to, like, still speak your truth and walk through the minefield, because you're not gonna make everybody happy. And I don't care anymore, you know, about that. And if you come to the show, people will see. Like, there's things that I talk about that I don't care that people don't like it or they do like it. And I don't encourage people to cheer or boo, you know, different topics or anything like that, you know. It's an interesting question, but I think people are just overly sensitive. And I think they're overly sensitive about other people's issues, which can be good, but I think you should let people also defend their issues and decide what is funny to them and not funny to them.
So
it's complicated also.
Yeah. Yeah. So it hasn't then, it has not changed you or made you feel like you need to change comedy. It almost sounds like you're more invested at this point in your career. You're like, look, I got to do what I got to do. And hopefully the right people appreciate it.
Yes, but here's the thing is that I have done that, but I've also learned as I've been writing this material that I had to adjust things to meet the audience halfway. You know, so there was jokes that I had, and I'll say, I'm not going to say I'm here, but there's a joke that I had about being about transgendered, right? And I would say it in the beginning, and it was a harsher joke. And then I learned from the audience that they would accept the joke, but I had to say it and write it and do it differently.
Okay.
And I learned that over a period of the joke failing and the joke being people not liking it. But if I wouldn't have had time to, like, find out how to make the joke work, like if I had just dropped it, then that would have been the audience sort of pressuring me or telling me to not do something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But thank God I have the freedom of speech and the freedom in the comedy club that I can say this controversial thing just because I'm trying to figure out how do I meet you halfway mentally and, like, comedically and, you know, how do I meet you so that I can say this thing that I want you to know and you get it and you're not offended by it. And I've had that. That's happened.
That's like comedy's version of how can we ever evolve and learn if we're too afraid to even have the conversation. So you silence the conversation before it happens.
Yeah. If you silence, especially with comedians, you know, and I can't talk about academics and things, but I just know, like, when you're trying to figure out, like, how to talk about something that everybody is, like, up in arms about or whatever. And like I say, that people are sensitive about other people's issues. Like, if you don't have time, if you can't speak out, if you can't say it, you don't have time to make it better or to work on it or to, like, even, because, and there's been things that I've done on stage where I went, okay, that's just stupid. And I'm not even going to say it anymore because it's not really, doesn't really hit me. You know, it doesn't really mean that much to me enough to say it every night and try to figure out how do I fix this and make it right.
Right.
I ain't got time for that. I got, you know, a bunch of other stuff I'm still trying to figure out or whatever, you know.
I like it. And I think people are looking forward then to, like you said, they'll come to your show and they will leave after loving you for 45 minutes. So you're on tour. We can look forward to the show. Time shoots by, but I do have to ask you, what you're one of the cult followings you have is from Mean Girls. Mean Girls, yeah. And then sequels, and then Mean Girls the musical, and now Mean Girls the musical movie. Mm-hmm. Is now that got slowed down because of the strike, but it's still in the works, coming out when?
Right. It's coming out in January, I believe.
Okay. Is that another project you're excited about? Do you relive that cult following?
Yeah. I mean, that was fun to do, first of all. I love Tina Fey, and I think Tina is just, you know, I say it all the time, and I don't care if she knows it, but like, I have such a crush on her writing. I love her writing. And she's a great person. I love hanging out with her and shooting stuff with her too. But I just love how she works. And Mean Girls is just like one example of it, you know. But like, this movie is going to be different from the other one. It's for another generation of girls, women, people who love comedy. And it was a trip to get back into also, because now the age difference between me and the actresses in the movie is like 35, you know, years or something like that. And so it was a trip because they were there into their own thing, man. I don't, you know, they were nice to me, but they were nice to me like you would be nice to like the old guy sitting at the end by himself when nobody's talking to him. Talk to the old guy for a minute. Just take him some Jell-O and see what his world is like.
You got a bunch of sirs and things like that.
Oh, man, all day. They were sweet, though. They were very friendly. But it was like, yeah, I could tell. I was like, oh, yeah, I used to do that. I used to go, oh, let me, I'm going to hang out and talk to this person who I don't know. He's older or she's older. I'm going to get to know them, learn about what they can, you know. It's like, oh, they're being kind is what they're doing.
I don't know. Maybe they're learning from somebody who knows. You're now in the position to share knowledge rather than soaking it up from somebody.
Yeah, that's true. I can't soak it up anymore. I'm done learning.
Time shoots by. I appreciate you taking time. You are on tour. People can check out all of the various. I mean, you're going to be here, but you're going to be a lot of places. So they can check out the website. We'll get the dates up on the screen.
Yeah, Tim Meadows Comedy Tour, I think it's called. And then I'm also in this movie called Dream Scenario with Nick Cage that's coming out, I think it's next week or something. It's a fantastic movie. I just saw it recently. And yeah, and Mean Girls is coming out. Mean Girl Musical is coming out, I believe, in January or so. And I'll be all around.
I'm laughing because your whole energy is like, I think it's coming out next week or something. Like, go ahead and find it. The whole
Googling.
This whole just celebrity Googling. Thing. You know, it's like, yeah, I did that movie. You can find it. Google me.
Yes, just Google me.
We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. We like hearing what that means to various people, how they're doing it, how they define it. So when you hear the phrase, use your voice for good, what does that mean to you?
I think it means when I hear that phrase, it makes me think of standing up for those less fortunate, those that can't speak for themselves. That's what it means. That's immediate the thing that I feel when I hear it. I don't know what else to tell you.
We will see you on tour soon. I will check out the movies. Next time you're in Philadelphia, come on through and co-host the show with us. I would enjoy that.
All right. I'll do it. I'll show you what a great journalist I would have been.
Absolutely. And we can pay you slightly more than the fast food place.
All right. Cool.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Right. You have a good one.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with actor, comedian, writer, SNL alum, Tim Meadows. He was just chill. I often say that I enjoy finding out that people that you have seen on TV or in movies are actually as cool as you would hope and expect them to be. And he is another person who lived up to that. I certainly appreciate that. I hope you did as well. Do me a favor, whether you're on your phone or your tablet or your computer, hit that button that says subscribe, like, whatever it is, so that you get notifications every Monday when another episode of The Pulse comes out. I want to remind you that you can check out all of the past episodes, some really good guests that I think you will enjoy, on YouTube as well as Connected TV. That's Samsung, Apple TV, all of those things. We're right there at your fingertips. All of the episodes, you can check them out. Hope you enjoyed. Hit me up on social media. I'm always eager to hear from you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you, whenever you can, use your voice for good, and have a good one.